Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ali. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is. Quote the Raven. Nevermore.
WrestleTalk.
Hello, I am Adam, of course, of WrestleTalk. I am joined by a former NXT Tag Team Champion. I am joined by a man with a Wrestling Observer 5-star match under his belt. And more important than any of those, I'm joined by a one-time WCPW Champion, formerly Killian Dane. Big Damo's with me. Big Damo, how the devil are you?
You missed founding member of BX. Come on. Like, I mean, you completely missed that part of the story.
I wish I had the shirt still. I wish I had the
it
shirt.
Was very, you gave me like a 5XL or something. It was hilarious. But I'm doing great. Thank you very much. How are you, Adam? It's been so long.
I know. We gave you a very big shirt, but a very small belt, if I remember
right. Oh, my
right.
God. Like, it was like a child's belt. And like, I remember when I think Joseph Connors took the belt, suddenly it was massive. So people are thinking like, I'm like, there's this massive disparity between us as humans. Like, no, it's just a different belt. You know what I mean?
You're a colossus.
Wow.
we will get to WCPW memories a little later on in the hour. So let's talk about the negative first, obviously. Let's get that out of the way. So you were released from WWE as part of the release on June 25th. You put out a tweet on the day. I'm just sort of wanted to ask you like how the timeline of that day went, like how were you contacted, how you felt at the time, and obviously now that there's been a little bit of time in between, how you feel now?
So talking about a timeline, so I went in to the PC at about 1 o'clock. Every Friday is like an open practice, so there's no like rigid classes. Anybody who wants to go in can go in. So I was going in every Friday with myself, Tim Thatcher, and a bunch of others would go in because Hideki Suzuki and Robbie Brookside were the coaches on hand. So I'd like to go in. We'd work with some of the younger lads, or we'd, you know, do a bit of catch wrestling and whatever else. So that's we were generally doing every Friday. So I'm actually in work, and one of the boys turned around and says, such and such being released. And I was like, oh, Christ. So go and look at my phone. And sure enough, I had to call the lads in charge and find out that I was released myself. So at first, you know, you're a little shell shocked, but at the same time, with how everything's gone this last year, it's really hard. It was really hard not to see it coming in one way, but insofar as, you know, being on television so much and being involved in stories and angles and things like that, you know, that's where the surprise was. Honestly, the only thing I'd gotten was positivity from every, like, we did like shows where we came in and did like shows in front of like just the PC to help some of the younger talent, you know, and you know, they're all so thankful that you know, you volunteer to do these things. They're thankful you come in to classes and work with newer people. And then, you know, you get let go like the week later. But listen, like the truth of the matter is like your name's going to come up one day. And I was always aware of that. I've been very, very lucky. We managed to get through 5 years almost of work in this company through some crazy times and periods, especially through COVID. Like, I mean, you know, I honestly expected serious talks a year ago, and they never came. So, you know, I got very lucky that when the year everything was shut down, I was employed, and I had no dark of pay or anything like that. So, you know, I've been very blessed in that regard. And, you know, I'm being released into the world as everything's opening up again. So, you know, there's a huge part of luck on my part with that. So, you know, yes, I was pissed off. Yes, angry, whatever else. Yes, I want to rub it in their face. But at the same time, you know, I'm very aware of how lucky I am that it worked out the way it did. Because had this been a year ago, you know, there would have been a lot more strains in my entire life, to be honest. And thankfully, it didn't work out that way. Because I'm even thinking last year, I wouldn't have been able, like, you know, your visa technically ends and stuff like that. So what would I have done? You know, there's a lot of ifs and buts because, you know, the departments in the government all changed over because of the change in administration. So I really don't know what would have happened as a foreigner living in America had that all happened last year. Sure. It's a lot different this year. You know, everything's, you know, everybody's in place now and whatever else. And government buildings are open, you know. but last year, you know, this could have been very awkward. So listen, I, you know, as pissed off as I am, that there's also a part of me that's like, you know, this could have been a lot worse. So
yeah. Well, speaking of someone, right, who was going through it last year and someone who is actually still with the company, obviously Drake Maverick, like you guys were really forming something there in NXT. Obviously he left and came back in a very kind of blurred lines situation, like where the fiction, where the reality was. Obviously, like, it felt like there was so much meat left on the bones of that story. You mentioned in another interview that obviously COVID derailed a lot of stuff, but do you know where it was going? What your creative input was in that story?
At one point, like, literally, see, before I got COVID at the end of last year, like, we had so much lined up and ready to go. They were going to run like a whole fan related thing where the fans chose what her name was going to be. And like, and you can imagine like how Drake would have led all this, you know, so like it would have been a lot of sighing and for me, I imagine, you know, there was a bunch of things that, you know, we were literally about to start, but then we couldn't, you know, cause literally this will sound crazy. I had been very lucky the entire time. I isolated really hard last year. The only place I went to was to the supermarket, or I went to work. And I happened to go in to work for the first time. I went to the PC. I met nobody except for Drake. We just were rolling around doing whatever. And the next day I tested positive. So I didn't even integrate with anybody else other than him. And he didn't even get COVID. So we couldn't figure out where it came from. I was lucky I didn't get sick, though. I was asymptomatic at the time. I got sick. Funny, I got sick about 6 months later. I got flu, which was even more crazy. Like, but I was very lucky when I did have it. But being asymptomatic still means I could have spread it and everything else. So,
of course, yeah.
You know, I was off TV for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever way it worked out. And then I think whoever we were meant to be feuding with, I think one of them ended up, you know, having it, and then they were off TV. So everything kind of got slightly derailed, and, you know, we were a month behind, and then we kind of started again on a different path. But, you know, that has been the story of the last year. You know, I think, like, I understand, you know, people, you know, get annoyed watching wrestling, whatever else, you know, as normal fans do of normal products. But, like, the constraints this year were crazy. And, like, I do tip my hat off to everybody who had a good match this year, because, you know, there's times where they're wrestling in front of televisions and they're still having good matches, you know what I mean? And you know, for us, like, we had like 30 fans in the building, you know, for a huge period in NXT. And, you know, that's great, but, you know, it's not 300 people. It's not 3,000 people. You know, it's not 30,000 people. So, you know, it was something, but, you know, it wasn't much. And, you know, guys, I remember like some of the lads having ladder matches and stuff in front of no people, and you're just like, jeepers, you know, so fair play to everybody this year. And you know, I'm not going to bury the creative team because they had a very difficult run of this. Every week it was always something else, somebody else, you know, or multiple people. There was a period where a huge bunch who didn't get it, they were just in contact with somebody, you know, so you're automatically having to isolate and things like that. So, and then the international talent who get stuck abroad and blah, blah, blah. So there was all kinds of crazy things that happened this year. And in a perfect world, if we'd have been in front of crowds, you know, I think, you know, people would have really appreciated it, because Drake's an unbelievable babyface. And I think it would have been a lot more fun doing this whole story with, you know, the crowd there to enjoy it properly. As it was, you know, with the 30, 40, 50 people, gave us everything they had, and we really appreciated that as it was. But I think we would have got a fair indication of what, how people felt about us. We started to notice, they started to really like us. We wrestled like Breezango and MSK, who we just assumed we would play the villain role against them, because I'm technically a villain stuck with a babyface who I hate. But it turned out they were really behind us, and that's all credit to Drake Maverick, because, you know, he's an incredible babyface, and I think like he's almost out of time in a way, because you could have slot him in 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whereas now people expect their babyfaces to be a little bit grittier and everything else. The fact that he is that little bit cheesy or camp or whatever way you want to put it, I think it kind of sets him apart, and, you know, fingers crossed for him going forward. I think he could help anybody and slot in anywhere. You know, he was a great guy to play with and have fun with. All of the stuff you saw on screen were literally us in real life, because my entire existence around Spud is like, oh, Jesus, he won't shut up. And keeps talking. And he's doing, oh my God, what's he saying he's buying this week or whatever? You know, and I'm like, you know, that's literally our actual life. You know, we've hung out a few times recently because England's been playing in the Euro 2020 and stuff like that. Course, went up to his house a couple of weeks ago and stuff. So
coming home,
but like, big win yesterday. So, you know, you know, for Drake, you know, it's been very funny, because when we do hang out outside of this, it's very similar to what we were doing on screen. So it was very easy to settle into that team. I can tell you that.
Who would have thought that pairing you with a much smaller camper British man would pay off? If only Lord, that had
I
been
see that happen before.
If only that had been prototyped somewhere, and you just know there's magic. There's magic to be woven. Oh, God.
If only someone had seen, you know, that the summer of beauty that was, you know.
the summer of BX. Long may it run. So obviously, speaking of people who are still there, obviously your wife, Nikki Cross, is there, and in a lot of ways, beginning sort of the first steps of a new journey over there. What's that kind of like? Obviously, you've made your thoughts on her new gimmick clear. I actually side with you. I think the sillier the gimmick and the more earnest the gimmick is. Does anyone remember Damien Sandow's body double gimmick? You know, it's very silly, but when you play it earnestly, you can weave genuine babyface magic. But what's that kind of dynamic like at the moment? Is it kind of like coming home and, hey, how was work, or do you not want to kind of
I'm like, hey Nikki, you're the sugar mama now, so you know you need to do well here. So no, out of all seriousness, like no, I'm sure for her, like, you know, it was because she was with us at training when we found out that I was getting the HEVO, you know, obviously there's a part of her that's utterly gutted, because, you know, we've done this journey together and we've been very lucky to have been able to do it together, to be honest. But out of all seriousness, the best thing that happened to her was, you know, the split from Sanity worked out great for her, because it got her a chance to do her thing and start exploring who she was. And then she goes to the main roster and then goes with Alexa. And then again, going away from Alexa has been better for her as well, because like being attached to somebody's great and everything else, but like, and they made some brilliant moments, and when they won at WrestleMania and everything, and it was fantastic. But the truth is, you know, you need to flesh out who Nikki Cross is, and finally we're getting that opportunity. I'm slightly biased, but I don't work for the company anymore, so I can say what I want. So when it comes to Nikki, I think she's an incredible talent, and they'd be idiots to not be using her on a regular basis. And I think they've kind of realized that. So just before they started the superhero character, somebody got sick or hurt or something, and they needed Nikki to fill in. And like, they loved how she did, that they had her on TV week by week by week. The superhero thing wasn't meant to start this way at all. So, you know, they were just like, let's just ride the momentum and go for it. And that's literally what they did. And I'm so glad they did, because sometimes when, you know, the stops start, it can take so long, and then, you know, people lose interest and whatever else. But, you know, she's getting a chance to talk before every match, which is, you know, her at her best is on a microphone. And obviously there's a slight difference in having to get her diction right on an American product as it would be from back home. It was a lot easier for to just be Scottish, you know. So here she has to be a little bit more wary, like Drew Galloway, you know, has been great for her to give advice on that, because he went through the ringer when it came to his accent, because he's from Ayr, which is a much thicker accent than Nikki's in Glasgow. But Nikki's having now, you know, to work a little bit harder on that, and just so she can be, you know, as presentable as possible for K kids all across the world. And, you know, I'm very excited going forward. You know, I said this yesterday, actually. You know, we need to have characters that kids can get behind, because that's what brought all of us in, was the cartoon aspect of WWF and WCW. And like, I can't really think that we have too many at the minute, because I know society is a lot grittier and everything these days and whatever else, but kids are still kids. The Teletubbies are still going, you know what I mean? So, you know, you need
Wait,
to
are
have,
they? Are they still going?
I read a tweet yesterday that they're all vaccinated, so they must still be going, you know what I mean? So
they must be so old and over the hill. Cards, so. Just, oh, I remember when this was all green.
You know, back in my day, you know.
The tubby custard was a lot thicker.
Baby, not a full-grown woman, you know.
American fans just
they don't
absolutely
get it.
No
it's
clue.
Okay, it's okay. Like, you can type it into Google, you know, it's your friend. But no, honestly, like for me, having like a fun, energetic character who can fall and can fail but can always pick herself back up again. And I think that's, for me, is incredibly important, because, you know, we've went through this period for ages where everybody's a badass. I mean, come on, like, you know, we need to start thinking long term, because, you know, how many badasses can work? You know, not that many. You can't have that many, but, you know, if we're all badasses, then who loses, you know? So it's great that, you know, she's willing to be, you know, a little bit sillier, dorkier, whatever, you know, word the Americans want to say. You know, camp is the perfect word for what we would say back home, you know what I mean? Because that's what it should be, because that's what wrestling was the entirety up until the last maybe 10 years or so. Obviously, I know MMA has got massive and movies and TV shows. Everything's getting grittier and things have changed and whatever else. But, you know, to bring kids in, we need to make it fun. And you know, she's definitely a character who can make it fun. And I'm really excited for it. And I hope that they keep using her the way they're using her right now.
Absolutely. So you talk about, obviously, like you and Nikki, it was your journey together. Obviously, Sanity was something that you guys did together. So let's stick in NXT. Let's talk about Sanity and sort of the creation of the group. You arrived into the group just slightly after it formed. What was that like? Were you part of like the formation process? Do you feel like, oh, I'm walking into something that's kind of fully formed and you're just working to a brief? What was the kind of the creative behind it? Who was leading the creative?
What's honestly going on? I went to work one day. I think Terry Taylor came up to me and said, "You're Insanity," or something like that. And I was like, "What?" So the injury to Sawyer Fulton was obviously massively unexpected. He tore his pec off he tore his pec off or something like that. So it was a terrible injury and it was really bad timing. And I'd just been in NXT for about a month or so, maybe less. I can't even remember. And you know, I wasn't expecting to be used on television until maybe January or something like that. I think this was November. And they decided, no, you're joining Sanity. And you know, it was the best and worst day of my life, because you know, Sawyer's a great fella. Jake is a lovely man, and I genuinely hated that I was replacing him. And you know, there's a part of you that hates it from a professional point of view, because, you know, your second choice, you're not, you know, it wasn't designed with you in mind and things like that. But there's the other party that's like, you know, grow up, you know, this is what life is. You know, it's everything I ever wanted was to wrestle on WWE television. And that's exactly what I was about to do. So, you know, I was really mixed emotions. I think that was one of the hardest days of my life, because I think I went home afterwards, like more gutted than anything else, because I felt terrible. But you know, it's worked out for Jake, you know, long term, and he's a great talent as it is, and I can only wish him the best. You know, he's done very well to reinvent himself, and I think he'll do more than fine. But you know, for me, it was, you know, I'm working with Eric, who I worked in TNA, and I just immediately jammed with. He was a great lad. I really liked him. Axel, who I'd met not long before he left, he went about a year ahead of Nikki, and you know, I met him a few times at WXW. He gave me great advice for tryouts, so I immediately knew he was a decent fella then. And then, you know, when I heard when Nikki got here a few months before I did, and like he was looking after when they were at the Download Festival, him and Jake were looking after Nikki, and you know, it just testament to how good people they were. And this is before Sanity was even being talked about as an actual stable. So, when you know, I joined that group, and I'm all these people who I really like already, you know, you're just like, it could be a lot worse than this, I can tell you. you know, that was great. Like as far as the creative process, no, I wasn't involved at all at the beginning, because honestly, if they had an idea to put me in there, they never told me. As far as I knew, I was going to be debuting in the UK tournament that was coming in the January, February. That was my, what I knew that I, how I was going to be starting. There might've been something else like thrown around, but you know, I wasn't really privy to it. All I knew was, yeah, I'll be representing Northern Ireland in the UK tournament. And then, you know, I joined Sanity instead. And like the idea of then going to represent Northern Ireland while also being crazy, you know, in America, it didn't really pay off, but I was gutted because I did. I was like, oh, I'll happily do both, you know, but you know, it didn't really work.
I'll win the UK championship. Sure, that's sure, fine.
Yeah. I'll do that. You know, anyone pay me double, sweet. I'll do double. but you know, honestly, the way it worked out was great because I never really done much tag teaming. So myself and Wolf started teaming. Then I'd be doing six men tags with Eric as well. So that was a lot of fun. Like, you know, because, you know, I love watching tag team wrestling. I just never really tagged for years. Like, I was in a tag team with Scotty Rennick years before that, but like I hadn't tagged for years. At least 4 years or something. I'd only done like the occasional one-off or whatever else. I'd been like almost exclusively a singles wrestler. So it was great to get in and try something new. And then like the stuff you can create in tag wrestling and six-man tag wrestling, and then all the multi-man matches we did, you know, were, you know, almost unlimited concepts and ideas we could have. And a lot of the guys we were working with were incredible at that point. So, you know, Sanity ended up being so much fun for all of us. You know, like, for us to be under EY's wing, who so many years on television, was brilliant because for the three of us, with limited TV, little bits here and there, obviously, you know, we'd all done a little bit, but like EY's extensive television experience just meant he was able to guide us where we needed it. And it was almost flawless for us.
And you talk about as well, like gimmicks where they are high concept, but you like stick with them and you commit to them full throat. And it kind of like you people really respond to that. Like talk about Sanity starting off as heels, but because you kind of commit to this high concept, you became the baby faces, which is, was that in any way like the plan for you guys to emerge as these kind of almost underdog baby face against Authors of Pain? No, or
the truth was, I think they were trying to push Authors of Pain as the baby faces, to be honest.
Really? Oh, wow.
We were kind of surprised of because we'd noticed that we were starting to get more and more following and stuff like that on the house shows and whatever else. But I think, like, you know, they maybe had an idea, well, why don't we try Authors of Pain? They can go and be these two badass LOD style wrestlers, and which they were, you know, they were both huge boys who could potentially do whatever. But like leading up to that match, us versus them, it was really noticeable. And like we did like these tapings leading up to the match with AOP, and the crowd's totally behind us, and we knew then, yeah, we were going to be the baby faces. Like, but at one point they were definitely going to be the babies, and I think that was the concept going into War Games, where we would have been maybe the tweeners and they would have been the faces with Roddy. But it didn't really work out that way, for whatever, you know, just as you say, it was quite organic. Like, it's a big production entrance. The guys like Axel and Nikki committed so much to the psychotic part. It was a lot easier for me. They wanted me to be stoic. I was like, sweet. no problem. I will stand here and do it. And then EY, you know, with the raspy voice, like really, like he was trying to replicate a little bit of, I don't know if you remember Iron Man 3, the Mandarin.
Oh, yeah.
Had some these really cool promos before he was, you know, exposed as being Trevor Slattery or whatever. but, you know, he was just edging on that kind of style. I loved that because it just really played into, you know, the mastermind of these crazy people, these angry people. And but I think the main two, Wolf and Nikki, like I think they really sold the gimmick, because they were, you know, they really lost themselves in the act. And if you'd seen Wolf before this, that was not who he was as a wrestler at all. He's a very serious wrestler. He's this incredible catch wrestler that with all this ability, and suddenly he's going nuts. He's like mosh pit fighting himself, you know. And then Nikki just really took it to the next level, and like good for her, because Nikki was always like this garbage heel on the independents leading up to this, you know, whether she's in Japan or America at Shimmer, or she was in Britain, all across Europe, she was the larger than life Nikki Storm, this awful person. Like, I used to be cringing so much when I'm watching it, because I'm like, oh, you're terrible, you are, you know. And that's the funniest thing. Then she goes in, she's playing a completely different role in Insanity. And, you know, I've mad respect for the two of them, because they were sweating buckets every night because they were putting, you know, a serious shift in, and that was just for the entrance. You know, whereas I just need to go blah, 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 blah. And EY is like, blah, 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 blah. It's pretty much the entire time. Like, I don't think he was saying any words, but it looked like he was saying stuff to the camera, you know. But like, honestly, like, it was a brilliant experience for all of us. And I think their commitment was what really took us over the line, and the crowd really responded. And I think it helped that we were all foreign in a way as well, because, you know, EY was Canadian, Wolf's German, Nikki Scottish, and you know, I'm Irish. So, like, you know, maybe for people who, you know, were a little bit alternative, you know, with different backgrounds and stuff like that, they could resonate a little bit with us. I mean, Wolf was the first German on WWE television, so that was pretty momentous in itself. And we never really celebrated it. It was one of those crazy things that we didn't really make a big deal of, because we weren't really meant to be nationalistic in any, you know, specific way, you know what I mean?
You do feel it though. It gives that kind of just not that like slight outcast vibe to it.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Like we were following one of the things, you know, I noticed a few years before that was, you know, everybody was wearing like the trunks and boots across the board, and then the Shield and the Wyatt family came in at the same time, all six of them weren't wearing wrestling gear at all. And that like kind of set the precedent a little bit, and you could start, you know, experimenting a little. And for us, that was great. You know, I was wearing this mad leather beat up kilt and stuff like that. You know, Wolf's wearing this bizarre costume and stuff like that. And like, Nikki's completely changed her gear. She's wearing like a corset, you know, weirdest things that you can think of. And, you know, we tried to make it work, and even all the jackets, we got them made by, the jackets were all made by a tattoo artist in Seattle or something. It was really like, we tried to keep everything away from basic wrestling. Like, the girl who made my kilts was based in Finland. She'd worked on like movies and stuff like that, or TV shows. Now it's funny now, like she works for, she does stuff for Natalia and for the Viking Raiders and stuff like that. So it's very cool the way it worked out. But at the time, you know, she was completely new. I found her on Etsy or something like that, you know. And it was really cool because, like, it just made us just that little bit different to everybody else around us. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to do. And, like, the response we got from fans and stuff was really cool because, you know, we're in the bubble, so we don't really realize, you know, the importance of maybe, like, what we're trying to do. Like, Nikki even, like, she was making her hair wet before going out, and there's been no real female who'd ever done that before, because she wore no makeup and just splashed water in her hair, which was very rare for female wrestlers, and especially in this company, you know, in the WWE. I say that too fast. NXT. But you know, so, you know, we were just trying these different things, and it was cool because they allowed us to experiment with this stuff. I mean, I finally got my own jacket, because all the other guys had their jackets, so I got my jacket made, and Hunter said, "Show me it, love it." And that was it. If you'd have said he didn't like it, I'd have been like, oh, I just put $1,000 or whatever, you know. But
Dad doesn't like my clothes.
he doesn't like it, you know. But thankfully, he let us just do what we felt was right for the characters. And obviously they gave us ideas with promos and all these kind of things and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, there was a lot of freedom with that initial build. Like, they were hot. Like, at one point, one of the coaches wanted Nikki wearing like kind of gothic makeup. And Hunter was like, "No, take it all off. You can pop the eyes, just because, you know, it's television, but everything else, you know, as natural as possible," because, you know, they really wanted Nikki to look like she'd, you know, been pulled out of an insane asylum, I think, you know, and she was more than willing to make that work. So when I think back to, like, even doing the entrance for the first time, it was goosebumps for me, because, you know, they'd been doing the entrance. So the first time I do it, I'm like, you know, the cameras are on, the crowd's going nuts, you know, the whole thing was an incredible part to be a part of, you know, the production, the pizzazz, you know, it was like, you know, it was a little bit like, you know, Kane or Undertaker and stuff like that. When you're watching as a fan, the lights go off and you're like, oh, this is different than everybody else, you know? So it was really cool for us. The lights go off, the search lights go across, the helicopter noises, and, you know, it was all very different. And, like, it was really cool to be part of. you know, I'll forever look back with the whole time of Sanity with serious fondness, because, you know, we had some brilliant matches on top of all that nonsense, you know what I mean? Like, and that's a testament to the people we were wrestling against and a testament to the people who I was teaming with, because, you know, those two lads will be, you know, a part of my life, you know, for a long, long time. They'll be, you know, as friends for as long as I can use the internet, I guess. You know, like, EY was one of the first people who texted me when I got released. He was the first person who texted me when I got released. And then, you know, Axel, like, literally had just left for Germany a few days beforehand. So, you know, we brought him to the airport. It was quite an emotional day, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's, you know, they'll be guys who, you know, I'll forever talk to. I mean, I was talking to Axel today, you know, and that's one of the coolest parts about how that all worked out. Even when we're in the main roster, we're always traveling together and we're just having like 6-hour journeys talking absolute nonsense. And, you know, it's, I don't know how you do it without, we never once wanted to kill each other. I mean, like, and that's, I think that's a good sign. So
yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, you know, I can go up by 30 minutes with Drake Maverick and I want to throw him out a window, you know. So,
so talking, we'll get to War Games in a second. But obviously one of the big nights in the history of Sanity was, of course, TakeOver Brooklyn 3, winning the belts. You were in the match and then you weren't in the match. How did that feel?
You know, the way we'd kind of built it up, you know, it was always kind of me fighting against the AOP lads. You know, like, we'd done that a bunch of times on TV. So it was so interesting, like, the way they did the switcheroo and everything else, because they'd kind of let, like, it was going to be me and Axel, you know, against AOP, and they change it. You know, EY steps up, I step down, and to be honest, it ended up being brilliant, because that was the kind of breakout for Wolf, and he really got a chance to showcase himself, because he was the only one of us who never had singles matches. So we never got to show how good he was on screen up until that point, but he got this breakout night. I remember Morrow's reaction. Morrow was like, he was losing it. And don't get me wrong, he lost it most times. You know, Morrow was amazing, but, you know, I think he really felt, because the crowd just came up so far behind Wolf. It was crazy. Like, because AOP had barely been bumped, and then you've got Wolf German suplexing the both of them and stuff. And it was really cool. And it was great for him to get that moment. And then, like, I had a really funny, like, moment where I crossbody Nicky and one of the AOP guys through the table. So and then, boom, there come Undisputed Era as well. So, you know, it was great, because a brilliant moment for the boys. There was a really special moment. The two lads are kind of hanging over the ropes of the belts, and I loved that. And then, boom, here come Kyle and Bobby. And, like, I'd been a really big fan of Red Dragon before, like, especially, like, you know, the couple of years leading up to that, they'd really, like, really blown up. You'd see them a lot in New Japan, ROH, whatever. So we were told pretty much we'd be going right into something with the boys. So we're very excited. And, like, then Adam gets revealed later on in the show. And the three of them were just an absolute dream for us to work, because we needed, you know, the next step on our path. And that was having these guys come in, and, like, they were causing havoc like we had. So it was quite interesting that they'd kind of almost taken our blueprint and used it against us. So, you know, there was some really fun writing at that point, and we really enjoyed it. And we just loved working those boys. We worked them a lot on the house shows, on the tours, and then on television and whatever else, leading to, you know, as we'd said before, War Games. And we had great chemistry with the lads. But one of the funniest things, we had like a 6-man tag the night before War Games, and we, For the one time, we decided to do like one of those noggin knocker spots. We grab everybody's head and run them into each other, right? Thinking, ha ha ha, very funny. The crowd will like this. We managed to split Adam Cole's head open, and he ended up getting like 10 stitches or something right before War Games. This was utterly crazy. Complete freak accident. Like, somebody didn't put a hand up or whatever. Just a typical noggin knock you've seen 1,000 times. Like, we did it, the crowd, oi! And we're like, Adam is in a pool of blood, and you're like, oh, Jesus. And you think of all the stuff that we've done. We've done the craziest stuff, the craziest matches, the ridiculous spots, all these weapons and everything. But a noggin knocker, right, splits him open and he has to go to hospital. It was mental. And this is the night before War Games. Like, so that was unusual, but you know, that's wrestling, and you have to roll with the punches. So
that's when you get a strict call from Dad saying, like, what have you done?
No, because I think, like, the it was more everybody was laughing. As bad as it was, it was like, so you're talking about the most cheesy, daft spot that like nobody has ever got hurt with in the past manages to open up like one of our top stars. Yeah, that's honestly, like, with it, you can't get criticized for it because it's one of those, you know, well, it happens, you know. But yeah, so we didn't even get Dad mad at us. I think he was just more like, from a noggin knocker, like, and like so somebody's got this razor sharp head that's obviously hit Adam and split him like 10 stitch wise, you know.
But the pointiest head in pro wrestling.
I'm looking at Bobby Fish. I'm thinking that there's something about that head, you know. head, you know.
So we'll talk War Games. Obviously, in the first War Games under the WWE banner, comes with a huge legacy. Comes with like years and years and years of expectation of it being this very, very brutal thing. Obviously, WWE's has got a slightly different blueprint. No roof, a bit more kind of weaponry involved. So, what was it going into like the creative of the match? Just talking like what history do we have to pay homage to? Do we want to make it our own thing? Did you feel the kind of weight of history on you guys?
Absolutely, because like we were aware that, okay, this is the first time it's been done in a long time. Obviously, other companies, smaller companies, whatever, had maybe tried it, but this is the first time in, like, you know, in WWF or, you know, or WWE, sorry, since then. It was like, so there was like a big expectation. I mean, they brought like Dustin and stuff like that in on the day to, like, you know, his dad made this, you know. So, you know, there was and other people came in and everything else. So, you know, there was like this little bit of us that that added expectation, as we would say. And for us as performers, like, you know, I'd wrestled all of, by this point, we'd all wrestled each other in a variety of ways. So we knew everybody's stuff, but like everybody, we still wanted to try and find moments for everybody that we could like make everybody look as good as possible. AOP were still very new to the business. So, you know, they're not really willing to pipe up just yet and give ideas. So, you know, and I have a lot of respect for everybody in that match that everybody came up with something for AOP to shine in. Like I think Roddy wanted to be launched into the boys and stuff. You know, it was a really cool way to introduce them. And well, like obviously we found out how the rules were going to be, how they wanted to set everything up. Like it was going to be three people in at once, and then people came in one by one, blah blah blah. So it was pretty cool how they kind of set it up. And then like with even the introduction of weapons and stuff like that, I think like we were unsure if we were going to do something like that. I can't even remember how it came about, whose decision it was. Like I know Wolf comes out with the nightstick. It was really cool. Because like we hadn't really seen something like that in a while, and he's actually he has it concealed in his jacket. Mm. So no, he pulls it out. He's beating people up with it. And it's like, I thought it was really funny because he was like the Maverick character. Like you weren't really sure. He was like the Joker of the group in a way. You weren't sure what he had planned next. So he was coming up with all these really silly ideas, and that this was one of them. He runs into the nightstick. He's beating people up. Like and then I come in, bring in the tables and stuff like that. And I think that was pretty cool because like the crowd just decided that they wanted tables, and I was like, well, thanks for that, because that was that's what we had planned next. So you know, I ended up looking like a genius. You know what I mean? I was like, oh wow, you want to bring in tables then?
I care about the fans. I listen to the people.
Yeah, I was listening. No, it was brilliant, like, because, you know, going the weapon route kind of saved, you know, because when it comes to blood and things like that, like, it just wasn't an option. Guys got split open and we had to cover that up, you know what I mean, and stuff like that, like, which is one of the parts of just the company at the time. They were very, very anti-blood. So we try to cover that by, you know, going with the weaponry and the other spots and whatever else. But no, putting that together was it was a lot easier than it could have been, because everybody in that match really wanted to look everybody else to look good. Sorry, and that was the most important part. We got these. My favorite moment of the entire match is Adam Cole doing the little like inchworm across the top of the cage, because it was just the antithesis of everything else. Like, this brutal, and then you've got him doing the burp, 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 going across. And so I think like maybe Mafu or something had it. Like, he put it to music. It was so funny. Like, and like that's you know, one of the reasons why I love wrestling is it is the three ring circus. You know, you have like, you know, the strong men, the acrobats, and you have the clowns. And, you know, for him to have that little moment in the middle of this serious match where people are getting destroyed, just got me. Like, and, you know, that's one of my favorite takeaways from that, was this moment, you know. But yeah, no, we did our very best to, you know, make AOP look like the killers they are. Undisputed Era look as brutal as they could be, because they were, you know, they were kind of like these MMA badasses, you know, but now they've got weapons and they're fighting whatever. And yet Kyle still, you know, he does this really cool thing. He's got a chain and he's wrapping it around like Axel's arm or something. And then a minute later, he's like smashing himself in the head with a chair. So, you know, we tried to have some cool moments in there that would keep everybody interested and whatever else. But the live crowd that night were just brilliant. And they were, I think they were just excited as we were. And we did our best to try and use both rings, because these are things when anytime we plan something, we're like, well, we need to make sure we're using both rings, and because it's very easy to get stuck in one ring, because that's what you've done your entire career in, one ring. So you're having to make sure to try and use both and do different things in both and whatever else. So, and I know that all the guys who came after us and AEW as well with Blood and Guts and whatever else, like, you know, you have to be really wary that you know, you've got a whole like new battleground to play in. So unfair play to everybody who's followed us, because, you know, I'm not going to lie, we did a really good job in our opinion. But, you know, we did it as best we could and we had a lot of fun. So for the ones who've managed to better us, we're very impressed. Like, there's been some brilliant matches. Like, some of the ideas and concepts that have come out after us, you know, you can only take off your hat, you know, wave at them. good for you. I'm terribly gutted that you did such a good job. but, you know, like, honestly, like, even when the women started doing theirs as well, like, some of the stuff they did last year was brilliant. Like, you know, you know, like, it's crazy. It's now become a part of the yearly calendar. But yeah, we were honored to be a part of the first one, and we were glad to get the feedback we got. Everybody was so happy with us afterwards. We're all utterly destroyed after. I remember I was sitting in catering and like just my ring gear going, oh my god, I can't move. I was like begging for somebody to bring me like a bun or something, or a cake, you know. Feed me. But no, it was awesome. It was a great experience, and like, you know, we all got to put in things that we haven't had a chance to do on television. Like, EY did this, I think it was maybe the first time he'd done the elbow drop or something on WWE. And then subsequently he did it, because it was something he did a lot on TNA and whatever else. So he was able to bring it in. And just little things like that we were able to put more and more in and stuff. So, yeah, no, we loved the whole experience of it. And it's nobody can take that away from us. You know what I mean? Like, it was one of the cool things. Somebody shared it, like, a year ago or something, and I watched it the whole time. I'm watching it going, Jesus, that was sore. Oh, that was sore. I can remember every bump and every.
So, I mean, like, you emerged from that match kind of almost as like a breakout star, because one of the things that I obviously knew about you is, you know, you're a big guy, but you can fly. Everyone, you know, the Van Damenator is one of the one of the most wonderful spots that you don't see enough of these days.
One of the worst ones for my body. That's the only thing.
We appreciate it.
It hurts me terribly.
But like, so you're out there, and like, I think War Games was one of the first times where people really got to see you kind of just doing this kind of jaw-dropping stuff, and you got a huge response, like, audience very, very high. But like, was that a struggle going into WWE? Obviously, WWE have they're a bit more famous for like, you're a big guy, don't come off the top rope, you do these moves because this is your skill set, because that's the kind of silhouette you fit. In NXT, is that a bit more relaxed, especially these days? Ooh. Like,
right now it's very relaxed, but when I first started, it was the opposite. And like, they not necessarily right at the top, but it took Shawn Michaels becoming more involved in the, you know, when he started taking classes and working with us, and he started watching all of our indie stuff, which is one of the weirdest, that, you know, I sent him indie matches and he's like, this is awesome, why aren't you doing this? And I'm like, well, they want me to be a stoic heel, so I can't really you know, I can't really come off the top rope very often, you know, or dive and stuff, you know. So like, then suddenly when we started becoming tweeners and then into faces, I was allowed to dive. I was allowed to do more. Like, it's not that they were specifically against me doing these things, but it was like, you know, if I'm diving and I'm doing cool stuff off the top rope, then what is the babyface going to do to make that better? You know? Mm. And so I fully understood why they wanted me to be, you know, a bit more plodding and a bit more like generic big guy. But as we became the tweeners, then the babies, you know, the gloves came off and I was able to start putting more stuff in. And it was good because, you know, I started coming up against, you know, the AOP and the Lars and stuff like that, who are, you know, big as me, if not bigger. So, you know, the character then has to start thinking of ways to beat these people or hurt these people. And against Lars, we had a four-way dance where I managed to like do this big mad dash off the stage through a table. And then I did the dive on him and stuff like that. So, you know, I was able to showcase a little bit there. Like that's one of the matches that I really enjoyed. Actually, it was a fatal four-way, the two of us with Johnny and Aleister Black. And it was one of the ones that like, I completely forgot about until the other day, somebody was telling me, like, sent me the link, and I was like, oh yeah, that was fun. You know, and like that came almost off the back of War Games, as you were saying. Like, I did have a little bit of a breakout, but like at the time it was, I can't even remember who the champion was or whatever, maybe it was Andrade or whatever, it just wasn't my time to go and be it, like the top guy or whatever else. You know, so I was kind of unfortunate timing wise, but I had so much fun throughout that whole run. And then I ended up, I was meant to go into a feud with Lars in leading up for the Royal Rumble show, but that got whatever, I can't even remember why, but it ended up getting moved to 3 months later. So I was kind of in limbo a little bit for a bit, and then we went back to finish the feud with Undisputed Era. So that 6 month period was incredible. Just so much. Well, maybe it was 8 months or 9 months, whatever it was an incredible run for us. Because as I say, you know, heel, tweener, babyface, all within a short time. And then the gloves came off, and you know, we're working with Sean at that time, and you know, there is a lot more trust from the office that, you know, we can do these things. And there was definitely a period there where almost anything goes, you know. I think they're going to be dialing back a little bit on that as we go forward, from what I've heard. You know, I'm not there anymore, so I can say what I want. But like, you know, I know at that point when I first went in, yeah, it was very strict. Even when I would do the Wasteland senton, one of the producers was like, why would you do that boom and then boom? Like, you do the first one, then, you know, make a big moment, hit the ropes, hit the senton. And I kind of argued. I was like, no, I'm just going to go boom, boom, because that's trying to be, you know, different than everybody else, you know. But that's the part of the learning process, is it's the give and take. You know, you're trying to marry what you like with what, you know, works on American television. And it took me a little while. It did take me a few months to really get my head around it. But it got easier as we got popular. And then I think there was a bit more trust from the office, especially working with Sean and stuff like that, because, you know, first of all, working with him was outrageous anyway, but, to then, you know, him trusting us and watching our indie stuff. And when I think it was him who said, why hadn't I done the Coast to Coast? And I was like, well, you know, it's pretty sore, you know, very big, very, very stiff ring, you know. And like, no, it was cool. Cause I think I only ever did it twice, I think on TV. And the second time they completely missed it, which is even one of those most bizarre parts of like, for such a slick operation, whoever our producer was that day missed it. And like, I literally took this bump for no reason, but
hey, okay. Live crowd loved it.
I don't even think they got a replay of it from what I remember. The only evidence I have of it was a fan who was in the building, took a photo of it. And I was like, or a video of it. That's the only evidence I have that it actually happened, you know? Yeah. You know, like for everything else, generally they're so slick and they capture everything. So like, I can't really like, you know, give anybody any heat for that. But
sure, that makes sense.
The first time doing it, you know, in the middle of War Games, all eyes were on me and the crowd went nuts. And Kyle was being very friendly. He was trying to edge towards me. I was like, right, I can get there. I can, you can move back, you know. But you know, fair play, Kyle's a great, I huge fan of Kyle O'Reilly. He's an incredible wrestler.
Oh yeah.
But he was being very friendly to me there. But I think I hit him so hard that he got nailed into the corner. I was like, well, that's what I was trying to say to you. You know, I can't make it. Like, I can't make it. I remember like one of the first times I ever did it was to Joe Hendry. And it was in a really small ring. It was like 15-foot ring or whatever. And I fucking launched him out of the ring because I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And I get on great with Joe. You know,
of course, Joe, yeah.
Great lad. But fuck, I launched him out of the ring. I had to go out and get him. I was like, oh, Jesus. But it was a very small ring. But then you're in Dudley, it's a 20-foot ring. It's a much bigger distance. But I was still really confident, especially because, like, you know, the cage is there, so balance wasn't an issue and whatever else. But managed to absolutely nail Cal with it. I'm like, oh, Jesus, it's happened again. I imagine going forward, I'll do some ring testing to see if it's possible to do it again.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So obviously, like you say, this huge run, this kind of climaxing at TakeOver New Orleans with the ladder match, 5 stars, wonderful. Obviously, then April 2018, Sanity move up to the main roster, move up to SmackDown. You debut Extreme Rules, you win at Extreme Rules, and then you guys basically vanish, man. Like, what's the story there? Like,
so I can tell you the story started weirder than that. Shinsuke Nakamura got bitten by a bomb dog at one of the, like a bomb police dog, right? At one of the venues we were doing a house show in. I think it was in California or something, right? Crazy freak accident. Like, what? Never in your life would you expect something like that to happen. He was meant to go against Jeff Hardy on SmackDown. So everybody's in a panic because Shinsuke's been bitten by the police dog, right? Has to go to hospital, whatever else. It's the most bizarre thing that happened, right? I think it became a big issue and stuff. I don't remember the full ins and outs, but it meant then that they need to do something with Jeff Hardy. Somebody said, oh, let's put Eric Young in there. Jeff Hardy can't lose. So Sanity's first appearance was a loss. And that, you know, in fact, it was, oh my God, I've got even further than that, right? The week we were meant to debut, we're all ready to go. There is this mad match. Like, I think it was New Day and Miz and all these people are in it. And we're ready to debut right at the end of the show. Would have been like a cool, you know, they're here kind of thing. And right as we're about to debut, they run out of time. So we're literally standing in Gorilla, all in gear, ready to go. They've done the walkthrough in this. Like, we did we did this in practice, but you know, it was live television, and Michael Hayes just said, guys, it's live television, you know, this happens, we overran, whatever. And it was this most start to what ended up being, like, you know, a bit of a disaster, you know. And then so then Shinsky gets bitten by the police dog. We're there, we were at the show, you know, and you're like, what the fuck just happened, you know. And you know, we get to the TV, and like, they have to put EY on with Jeff, and then we do something with the Usos as well. Like, we end up losing. That starts us on a bad path. And then we go into something New Day, which was, I think, was always going to be the case, was us and New Day. But we go over them on Extreme Rules, and like, major fair play to Xavier Woods and to Kofi, because they pitched for us to go over, because I think we weren't meant to win. So I think like the New Day were just so hot that they were unsure if they even wanted New Day to be losing. And so I think the boys really, you know, made a play and tried to get it that we would go over. And then next thing after that, I think literally 2 weeks after that, we lose to New Day, and it was done. And like, honestly, timing is everything. You know, you can get really lucky and you can get really unlucky. We then came back. We did a thing. There was Daniel Bryan and Kane and stuff like that. And then I think we were gone again for a good while, but came, popped up again at Christmas, did a couple of shows over the Christmas period. And then the next time we came back, we were 3-on-1 against The Miz. So so there was some, well, there was some other, I've missed a few things here and there, but like, you know, generally, like, we just kind of came in at the worst possible time. Bludgeon Brothers were on top. They were heels. We were heels. So they were never going to do something with us and them. New Day, the Usos, they brought, I think, Sheamus and Cesaro came in as well. They went through a period where they were off TV for like 13 weeks or something. Sheamus and Cesaro, it was crazy. You know, so there was just so many guys who just couldn't get, you know, TV time at the time, and for whatever reason, you know, and I couldn't even tell you what the ins and outs were. And you know, we went through like something, it must have been 11 weeks or something, where we didn't do something at all, I think. And we were doing the dark matches before the shows, and we were getting great feedback. Like, that's one of the hardest parts of it, was, you know, they were really happy with us, you know, and you're like, well, okay, prove it then, you know. But you know, like, timing is everything, and it just wasn't on our side. And like, you heard how it started, you know, the two weeks, the first week didn't happen because of time restraints. Second week, the bomb dog bites Shinsuke Nakamura, and you're just like, what the fuck? You know, this is just a comedy of errors. But yeah, you know, we had a great time otherwise. Like, you know, and I got to travel the road with two lads who I had the time of my life with. And like, we got to the point where we used to get like a minivan, right, instead of a car, right? So we get a minivan, so there's loads of room. People would start joining us, like Dillinger came with us for a while, and Aiden English came with us, and then there was a night Aiden English and Nikki were with us, and then we met Tommy Dreamer, and we were all in this mad Airbnb. And you know, I can't there's days I wonder how do I end up in these situations. But I honestly had some fantastic nights with the boys, and like, the house shows were incredible. Like, we had some of the most fun of our lives on house shows, because it'd be the three of us against the Usos, and New Day, like a three corner thing. Somebody would join the Usos, and like, we'd just have it, like, we'd be tearing the roof off the place because they're so good, and you know, we just get in there and be the villains. But we're able to add things in here and there that just, you know, really suited us, and like, we had a lot of fun with the live crowds. And you know, like, those are the parts of wrestling that we genuinely love, because that's the real wrestling aspect of it. What you see in television is, you know, that's the TV show, that's the product, that's the you know, that's the script. But the house shows is where, you know, is our real living, you know. That's what we're all really in this for, if that makes sense. Because,
oh yeah, of course,
the interaction with the crowd and everything else, you know. And whereas we can't always interact with a crowd on television, you know, it's a very different, style. And so, you know, listen, like, there was a lot of ups and downs, but, you know, I'll always look back on the entire thing, you know, fondly, because I was hanging out with some brilliant people. I got to wrestle some legends and future legends. And we got to work with producers such as Finlay and all these things. So, you know, my first time properly spent time with Finlay was, he was producing one of our things on television. And, you know, for me as a kid growing up in Northern Ireland, he was pretty much my hero from about 12 years old. So, you know, there was just so many positives to it as well. So, So worst comes to worst, I can always have those good memories. So
yeah, of course. You talk about sort of like obviously being in NXT and Hunter being very involved in kind of your presentation and stuff. What is the relationship sort of with obviously these NXT guys get brought up? Does Hunter like stay kind of protective of you guys, or does he sort of have to release you to other creative and he doesn't get to, because I can't imagine having that much kind of like, oh, I want you to look like this, I want you to look like this, and then sort of seeing you debut and lose, just like.
So we were unlucky because Hunter was helping negotiate the deals with Fox and USA, so he wasn't there. So he was needed to be doing all the other stuff, so he wasn't at TV for months that we just started. So I think that was maybe a factor that didn't really help us, because you know we did the debut. And I'm wearing the big fancy blue kilt that I'd bought. Like, we've done that as like a way to try and all be color coordinated, because we were always kind of mismatched of colors. We've finally all bought gear that's just a bit closer. But like absolutely hated my blue kilt. And I'm like, oh crap, right? Because I've spent thousands upon thousands of dollars on all these kilts, right? And I'm like, well, that's kind of the gig I'm going for, kind of the look, you know. And I have to very quickly try and come up with something. And like it was Road Dogg came up to me at the time and he's like, listen, if there's anything you can think of, because I don't think Vince likes the kilt, maybe it's too colorful, maybe too fancy, I don't know. So if you can think of something. So I went to the drawing board trying to think of things, and like I went for like I bought a couple of singlets, and they were okay, but like I had more singlets in absolutely years, and I didn't want to go into trunks because I didn't want it to be too I wanted to be different than what I was doing, because if it was trunks it would have looked pretty similar to what I was already doing. But so I went for the singlet, hated the singlet, it was so uncomfortable. I mean, it was fine, and it was good quality, it was done by a girl back in Glasgow and she did a good job and stuff like that, but I did not enjoy, because I hadn't worn singlets since maybe 2012 or something. So but eventually I settled, like I started wearing trunks, you know, I've really got a pair of trunks I really liked, and by the time I started wearing the trunks we were kind of on the way out. So like image wise I was just a bit unlucky, because they didn't, I wish I'd just wore one of my dirty black ones or the gray and black one that I had or whatever else, and maybe debuted that way, because it would have looked, you know, grittier and like, you know, like uglier, you know. I think I went too pretty too early, and you know that's the problem. I was just too, it's just too handsome at the time.
Story of your life, Damo. Too life. Pretty, oh, too oh, early. But where'd you go from there?
That's just the way it is. But you know, listen, for everything else, like they were pretty okay. Like they weren't too hands on about the image otherwise. Like, but we almost wish they would have been, and then we would have known like if there's anything we could have changed and tweaked and twisted. But sure. You know, listen, like one of the main problems I think was just. I imagine if the Bludgeon Brothers weren't on top, it might have been different. You know, if New Day or Usos were on top right at the start, then that's immediately a different scenario. But like, one of the creative team came up and said, we've kind of booked ourselves into a corner with the situation with the Bludgeon Brothers, and like that play. That was obvious because it played out, you know, pretty the way it played out after, you know. So like, you know, that's wrestling though, and you know, you have to roll with it. And like, as I say, you know, it didn't work out perfectly, but you know, we had a good time at where we could. So
so you returned to NXT, your idea, or were you kind of told this is a situation? And also just to kind of follow up on that question, what is this sort of etiquette with that? Like, because you hear of people pitching to return to NXT, like is that a genuine thing, like locker rooms like is that a kind of like, oh, I kind of wish I was still there because then I could work in this environment? Obviously I'm not. Yeah, what's the situation? No,
that's interesting. I think it every scenario was different, because I'm sure there's a bunch of people who asked and didn't. I went to Hunter in maybe the January, because we definitely were off TV at that point, I think. And I just said, listen, I don't want to collect a paycheck. I want to work. I want to be, if you've anything on NXT UK, if you've anything on NXT, then please consider me. And I genuinely thought he blew me off. Because, you know, he was like, yeah, sure, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I'll find out from them what they want to do with you guys and blah, blah, blah. You know, I genuinely kind of thought nothing more of it. Then, you know, fast forward 3 months later, it's like the week of Mania, I think it is. maybe it's maybe the SmackDown after Mania or something like that. And they said, right, here's what's happening. You're going back to NXT. Wolf, you're going back to NXT UK. Eric, you're going to go to Raw. You know, we're splitting yous up. And like, I think we were all gutted to get split up, but at the same time, we knew it wasn't working. So it was probably for the best. Me personally, you know, I was excited to go back to NXT. I'd happily stayed, you know what I mean? Like that's the thing. But like, I was young enough. My ego was still large enough that I wanted to be working. And like, you know, Hunter said to me, and I respect that. He said, like, I know you're not one of the guys who wants to just collect a paycheck. I know you want to do something. You want to work. You want to be a part of this. And I said, yeah, absolutely. Like at that point, I was 33, I think, or, you know, something like that. And I'm like, and maybe even, yeah, I think it was 33. And I'm like, I'm feeling great. You know, I'm ready to go. I just want to get going. And like, I was, you know, very grateful to be brought back. And like, literally within, I think that the day after, I think I texted Matt Bloom at NXT and I just said, like, can I meet you on Monday? And then I went in and I said, listen, I want you to put me in Shawn Michaels' class so I can start talking to him and start getting this right for the re-debut. And over the next couple of months, that's exactly what we did. I'm working with his class. At the time, it was like Priest, Dijak, Riddle, Keith Lee, a couple of others, and a great bunch of lads who I knew most of them from before anyway, from the Indies and or from you know, maybe I'd worked them or whatever. So it was a great bunch, and we had a, you know, that you're put into the feud then with Riddle, and that was awesome. Like I didn't realize how good Riddle was until I wrestled him. And as soon as I wrestled him, I was like, this guy is incredible. Like I think I'd seen some of his matches thinking, yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah. But then when I was in there with him, I was like, this guy is something else. Like he's really special. And like, I had so much fun wrestling with him and then the stuff with Pete and Priest. And like, there was a bunch of other stuff then we were doing on the we call it the coconut loop here in Orlando, you know, so me wrestling some of the younger lads here, and you know, I had so much fun, like, and then like getting into different classes here. Eventually, like, I got into Finley's class, and that was incredible for me because, as I said to you earlier, like working with him was great. Now I'm learning from him, and that was just something else. So like, you know, I made sure to try and make this NXT run really work for me long term. Because I learned a lot, and like, you know, at one point, like, I was really, to be honest with you, like about a month before, you know, I did get released, I remember saying to Nikki, like, this is probably the most, like, content I've been, like, because I feel I'm learning every week, and like, I'm definitely doing more, because there's a period where maybe you're on the main roster, and you'll pick up little things here and there, but you're not really getting the same constructive criticism. Whereas here, there's more time to get, you know, that constructive criticism, and you know, people can break it down to you, because the likes of Regal and Finlay and Shawn Michaels and whatever else, that, you know, they have that time for you, whereas you don't necessarily have that time on the main roster. So like, listen, like I made these last 2 years really work for me, and like, you know, the transition from doing the tape shows to the live shows was brilliant, and there was a real energy to it. Like pre-COVID, like there was a lot of fun to do, and like, the whole ratings war, whatever else, was a lot of fun.
Ah, yes, a war. I was going to ask you, like, was it like, because obviously, like, war is something that we cooked up in order to make our headlines a little more interesting. What was the kind of prevailing attitudes backstage with that stuff?
Well, like, so all of us are like friends with most of the guys on the roster, so it's like, you know, a lot of those guys we've known forever and whatever, or we've wrestled or we've been on shows with. So so there's a fun part to it. And then you know, there'll be like the wars of words and whatever between whoever, and you're like, all right, come on. But like, don't get me wrong. Like I know that if we had a big match or if they had a big match, then, you know, both rosters were paying attention to each other and watching the matches and stuff. Like there's no, like, it was a war in words only, you know what I mean? Because like a lot of the boys on the NXT roster, very friendly with the lads across there, and like, and we respect so many of the lads who are there, and like I don't mind saying it, like I think it was a war for the television product, you know, the people who are worried about ratings and all those things only because for us, it was our incentive. Absolutely. We wanted to have as killer match as we could. We wanted to do the coolest stuff that we could, wanted to be as exciting as we could. So all that is definitely true. But like insofar as like, were we like, if we met them at an airport, would be try and fight them? No, absolutely not. We'd be drinking with them, you know. And that's who I am anyway, you know. But and like that's one of the funniest parts of it. Like I think like maybe people tried to drum up like drama and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
for and that's fine. That works for some people, but no, like there's a lot of people there. There's people on that show who have helped train and you know help develop outside of this. So like. I've been very happy to see how they've done and they've done really well. So like me personally, like I thought it was good for the industry that there was another show, great for the boys that like there was this with high production and everything else. And there was just so many options for guys, you know, like, whereas there wasn't, you know, a few years before that, there maybe wasn't as many options. So now suddenly there's another great option. So no, it's been a good thing for the industry and me personally, like watching, like literally watched the pay-per-view the other day, but full crowd, the energy's there and everything else. And you're just like, you know, that's what we're all driving towards again is being able to perform in front of audiences on a regular basis. And I thought they nailed it with their last pay-per-view and, you know, it's going to be very exciting for them going forward again. So I'm sure, you know, the being split apart from the ratings war will probably be a benefit for both companies going forward.
For sure. Obviously, like, so your tweet ends, see you in 90 days. I'm not going to ask you where you're going because I know you can't tell me. but I am interested in, because I watched another interview you did where you mentioned a bucket list. You mentioned going to Japan. I just wondered, like, just throw some names at me. Like, who else is on your bucket list, both abroad and domestic?
So I've got better at this. I've written down a list. So I'm going to do my best to actually use a part of this because I went into one of my first interviews completely blind, right? So I've got a list. I'm not going to Cody Rhodes it. His was very dramatic and very special. So me personally, top of my list is Tomohiro Ishii. I wrestled him in Rev Pro, I think it was 2015. And it was one of the best experiences of my career so far. And I'd love to go back with the experience that I've got under my belt now to wrestle him again, because I think we could do something magical. Shingo Takagi, like I watched in Dragon Gate for years and years and years. And I think the evolution that he's really put into his entire character, into his wrestling, is incredible. He's been on fire, to be honest. So, you know, he would be incredible. Obviously, Okada. Okada is somebody I never got a chance to wrestle. I wrestled Tanahashi, Ishii, Nakamura, and I just sadly missed out on Okada. So he would be one I'd love to work. Big fan of Brush in ROH. I think he is one of the best talents on the planet right now. I don't think I've ever seen him have a bad match. And I think like that's probably the highest praise I can give anybody. Kenny Omega falls into that category, obviously, because he's outrageous, but like that's the only way I can really describe him. He's outstanding in the ring. I think he, over the last 5 years, has maybe been the most consistent performer, and that's saying something, because we're in a really high standard of wrestling right now. Maybe I can say that because I'm in wrestling right now, but I mean it, because, you know, watching him go from being, you know, a funny character in DDT to going into the junior division, becoming the cleaner later. He was in the tag team, the Golden Lovers tag team. You know, there's just so many phases of Kenny. And then like this last few years, he's really taken it up a level. Obviously Eric Young would be something else for me, like to wrestle again. We wrestled, like we did put everything we possibly could think of into a 4-minute match on TNA. So I'd love to wrestle him again when he's back and he's fighting fit again, because he's just outrageous. In every way, like he's got everything under his belt. He can do any character, heel, face, tweener. He could be the opener. He could be the main eventer. You know, he'd be the referee and he would do a great job. You know what I mean? Like Eric's one of those boys. Moose has been on fire lately. You know, he's somebody we roomed together a bunch of times, but never actually wrestled. He's done some wonderful stuff recently, actually. Miro has been, you know, killing it since he's went into AEW. The stuff he's been doing lately, like everything. Like, I'm a big fan of Miro. Only wrestled him once on the house shows, and he was I couldn't believe he wasn't a world champion. So I know that he's gonna prove that, and he's gonna become one. and I think it'll be very soon, because there's very few people who tick all the boxes that Miro ticks. Outside of that, you know, you've got obviously Tommy End, Malakai, who had an incredible debut last night. Tommy was one of the very first people who messaged me when I got released, and he sent me such a lovely message, because he'd literally just been through it himself. So, you know, the timing was brilliant. We entered WWE together. We actually had our tryout together. We were rooming together before the tryout. Poor guy, I snored that night, because I think I was I don't even snore. So I think I kept him awake all before the tryout. I think he was really mad at me. But obviously, Axel Tischer, the former Alexander Wolf, I definitely cannot wait to get in the ring with him properly. We were in for a minute and 50 seconds, I think, on NXT television. And it'd be great to maybe get over to Germany and wrestle him, because, you know, we met there a long time ago. He was so nice to me then, and then he became one of my best friends in the world. So I cannot wait to get in the ring with him, maybe even tag with him, who knows. But I definitely want to have at least 20 minutes of European uppercutting each other, because that would be awesome. But outside of that, like, my favorite performer on the planet, I wrestled him in What Culture, was as Rampage Brown. If there was any way we could wrestle the game, that would be incredible. Him and Joe Coffey are just... they had a couple of great matches recently. They're two of my favorite opponents of all time. And I would definitely love to get in there with them. But, like, outside of that, there's just so many other lads across up, like, so many companies who have been absolutely killing it. Like, that Darby Allin fella has done stuff that it blew me away. Throwing himself down the stairs and all. Oh my God.
Oh God. So, yeah.
He literally reminded, like, I know he does, he's a skateboarder and stuff like that, but he reminds me of all the worst falls I had on Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2, you know. He's literally, like, shown me every single fall since I've seen it. But, like, some of the stuff has been brilliant, like him and Cody and all that stuff. And, you know, Cody and the Bucks are again, like, I never got to wrestle any of them. I was on shows with them right at the end, and just never quite got a chance to lock up. But, like, you know, they're all absolutely incredible. FTR, I got to wrestle just once in a house show as a four-way tag or something like that. And those two, like, I think we'll look back on this time of wrestling and you know, really, like, talk about them like we talked about, like, the Horsemen and stuff like that, and, like, the Brainbusters, everything, because, like, they were just Rock and Roll Express. There's just so many others. Like, I think that's how we'll maybe look back at it, like the likes of FTR. They were just such talented wrestlers with great brains for the business. Yeah, and then obviously, like, Andrade, like, I adore Andrade. He's like one of the lads who I would have such a laugh with when we're on tours and stuff like that. Like, I just immediately was drawn to him as a person. So, and I love watching him as a wrestler. So, as I say, him and Pac and all these others, there's just so many great talented wrestlers out there right now. And I'm very excited to get going again. No matter where I go, like, what I'm most excited about, to be honest, is who's the next group coming through. Because I know when Drew Galloway came back to Britain, when he first left WWE, like, he picked a lot of us from about 2014 onwards, because he knew that we were all determined and we all wanted to go somewhere, wanted to do something. Myself, Noam, and Nikki, and there's a bunch of others, and Tommy was another example that, you know, he picked a lot of us and really, you know, took us under his wing and gave us, like, a lot of advice that I definitely needed to hear. And I want to be able to do that for the next group coming. And, like, so what I want to do when I do, you know, get through my legal loopholes and whatever else, is be able to find out who's next in line and who really wants this and who wants to get to the next level and be what Drew was for me. That's exactly what I want to be for everybody else. I want to try and inspire people to get to the next level, because the only way we're going to have an industry that works is that people learn from our mistakes. So, and that's definitely what I'm going to try and do, is show them this is everything I did wrong. So,
so Damo, what I'm hearing from you right now is you want us to set up Wrestle Talk Pro Wrestling. That's what I'm. That's, so you can come in and sort of be
only if you get me the tiniest belt possible. All right. So it's important to me that you think of me as Yokozuna and the belt as, you know, much smaller. So.
Man, just ending, I guess, with just a little trip down memory lane. So What Culture Pro Wrestling was a load of silly fun. I don't mind saying, like, it was one of the highlights of my life, just like being your weird little homunculus kind of little ratty manager.
What a mouthpiece.
I've got the mouth for it, right? One of the kind of the memories I have from it was it was you versus Alberto El Patron at the time. And I remember, like, I knew was I'm gonna get up at the end. At the end of the match, I'm gonna get up on the apron and take an enziguri. That's which I sold beautifully, by the way. No, I did. But I remember during the match, and I've never forgiven you for it, Damo. you knock Alberto into the ropes, and then I'm looking at you and I'm being like, yeah, doing that kind of, yeah, you get him, waiting for my spot later on in the match. And I remember you point to him and you go something, you mouth something at me, and I'm like, we haven't gone through this, Damo. What am I supposed to do to him? Oh, and no. you turned your back by this point. So I'm just like, what do I do? So I go up to him because he's resting on the ropes and waiting for something. Now, I know now that what he was waiting for me to choke him on the ropes. I didn't know that. So Damo, what I did was I ended up giving the weakest slap in the face. And then he suddenly he gets out of the ring and he starts chasing me. Like, I'm like, none of this is in the script, Damo. What have you done to me?
If it helps, that's awesome. So if we were to do this again, I would definitely not plan anything now that I know that that seems to be such an issue. So honestly, that actually makes it better. Because I reckon if you'd have choked me, you'd have sold it, whatever. But because you gave him such a weak one, he was like, well, I need to beat him up now, you know?
So. I'll smell this.
Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't even remember that. That's awesome. So that's great. That's great. I'm glad that you haven't forgiven me.
Never.
I will have to make it up to you one day. You know, maybe we will we will bond again over some sort of board game of some style.
Oh, please. Oh, what are you playing at the moment, Damo? I've got to end on a board game question. So, what are you playing?
Right. You're going to laugh at this, actually. So we, because it was only the two of us over COVID, we got very bored of a lot of things. One of the Treehouse games we had was one that we were playing for ages, then we got bored of that. Monopoly Deal became massive, actually, for us, because we were able to fly through that. And, like, she would play me until she beat me, so it happened quite a lot. But we've actually went really, really old school, and it's actually Trivial Pursuit, which we're playing right now.
Really?
Because it's US Trivial Pursuit, and we are both clueless when it comes to US history. So we both get just shafted guessing on the history. Like, so we get all the pieces and you're ready to go. And we keep, and she's a history student, so she should destroy me. You know, so honestly, that's what we have. Honestly, that's what we've been playing lately. But funny, I was speaking to Zach Gibson.
Collection's insane.
He's a collector, and we were talking about Ticket to Ride the other day. So we might try, that soon. So it's one of my favorite games. Obviously Carcassonne and stuff like that as well. Like, you know, there's a bunch that, like, when I go home, like, honestly, like, so I have like a little board game club in Northern Ireland. One of my best friends and a few of his pals, we would go and play with, because there was a period when I was really trying to get into figure this out with, you know, going through my medical and all these things, that I wasn't drinking, because I was trying to take this about as seriously as I possibly could. So I was trying to create scenarios for myself that would mean I wasn't drinking and wasn't doing whatever else. So not that it was a major issue or anything, but like, it was more, I was taking my training really seriously. So that's how I started getting into board games. Because it was the best way to you know, spend time with the people who are I love hanging around with anyway.
It's great.
You know,
and
we're burying each other the entire time, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, absolutely.
But no, I played, is it Werewolf the other day? I was at a games night, And that was a lot of fun. It was like a bunch of wrestlers and their wives. And it was awful because we all had to play roles. Because
who was the werewolf? Who was the werewolf?
So I never got the werewolf right, but I got to play the hunter in one of the games. But so Shane Thorne, formerly known as Slapjack, right? He was convinced I was the werewolf, right? And he had me, like, he managed to turn everybody against me, and they all voted me out, right? But as the hunter, I was able to take a shot at somebody before I left, so I shot him. So it meant that the werewolves won because we were the last two villagers. He was a villager and I was a hunter.
Oh, no.
So the two of us dying meant that the werewolves won. So, but no, it was fun. We played that last week because it was the first time we've all got together.
Yeah, well, of course.
Everybody's vaccinated and we finally got to play. And, you know, there's been games like that. Like, we tried doing stuff online and stuff. It was a little harder. What we did, we started playing... what was the game we were playing? Hold on, I'll just double check. It was one of the online games everybody was playing. So we would all get together.
And was it Among Us?
Among Us. And there was another one as well. And, like, you know, it was a way to try and make up for the fact that we weren't all getting together and doing games nights and stuff like that. Like, because, like, you know, you really miss – one of the weirdest parts of the last couple of years is you really miss the interaction and the nonsense of hanging around with people and whatever else. So Among Us was a good way because, you know, we're all lying to each other and stuff like that, and it was fun. And, you figure out really fast who's good and who's bad at lying. So
I've got to ask, who's the best liar? Who's the best liar in the rocker room?
So I always thought Dakota Kai was a good liar, and then when we first started playing Among Us, but I figured out all her tics and I knew when she was a lying bastard, to be honest. So, but she was one of the only ones I really figured out. Jessamine Duke was, I think she always wanted to be the villain. So I think we always just voted her off every time anyway. So, Dakota was, she, at first I respected her. And then by the end, you know, I always knew when she was lying, you know. She had one of those innocents, you know, oh, no, I'm not, whatever. She's one of the worst. Dijak is one of my favorite because he's always so deadpan when we play those games because you can't see his face. He ended up being a very good liar. But he always ended up killing himself somewhere or whatever because more from not knowing what the rules were, you know. Dijak forgets to do the tasks or whatever. So you're like, right, he's blatantly the bad guy, you know. Shane Thorne is the ultimate liar. Even when he doesn't need to lie, he will lie. His ideal night is getting voted off every single game, even when he's not the bad guy. That for him is a
chaos.
Good night. So he is chaos. Like, there's just no other way around it. Dio Madden or Mace is a very good liar. So he's him and his wife are particularly good at it. His wife always seems to be the villain. So which I don't know how it happens. Always the villain. So, but yeah, we've got a good bunch of lads and ladies here. We do the games with, and thankfully we can now do it all in person again, which is. Been the best part of getting to the other side of this this whole pandemic. So
yeah, of course. I have a board game club of my own on a certain YouTube channel, which I'm sure I will be pestering you to join us at some point.
I may have to do something about it. So we may have to do something about that.
You heard it here first, folks. Awesome. Damo, it's been a wonderful to just spend some time catching up with you, seeing how you're doing. I wish you nothing but success in the future. Can't wait for the 90 days to elapse and can't wait to see where you end up next.
Thanks
thank you so much for talking to me.
No, thank you very much for having me. It's taken me all the way back to our wonderful days where you don't forgive me anymore over things and T-shirts that are too big for me. And you know,
Damo, BX for life, you know that. But also, you didn't stop me getting powerbombed through a table. If I remember rightly, you tried your best.
I tried and I failed and you got powerbombed. And you know what? Like, you know, everything's a learning experience, Adam.
You'll do better next time,
people,
Damo.
We grow as humans, and next time we'll get it right, you know?
BX for life. Awesome. have a wonderful rest of your day. I'll see you later, mate.
Thanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.